Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. And joining us now in the studio is Laura Poitras, who's a documentary filmmaker and journalist who is a co-founder of The Intercept and the founder of a new video journalism project, Field of Vision. She has made a trilogy of films about post-9/11 America. Her first film, My Country, My Country, focused on the Iraq War and was nominated for an Academy Award in 2007. The second, The Oath, about Guantanamo, was nominated for two Emmy Awards. And in January of 2013, Poitras was contacted by an anonymous source claiming to have evidence of NSA illegal activity. After several months of anonymous emails, she traveled to Hong Kong with Glenn Greenwald to interview the source, Edward Snowden. All this is documented in her third film of the 9/11 trilogy, Citizen Four, which won an Academy Award. And her NSA reporting contributed to a Pulitzer Prize for Public Service awarded to The Guardian and The Washington Post. Her latest film is Risk, which is about Julian Assange, which opens nationwide in theaters Friday, May the 5th, and will be aired later on Showtime. Welcome to Background Briefing, Laura Poitras.
Hey, Ian. Great to see you again.
It's good to see you again, Laura. And let's sort of do a bookend with Citizen Four. In the Citizen Four documentary, there's a bit of a gap between the time that you film Edward Snowden and the time that he leaves on the plane. And that involves the arrival of WikiLeaks, or at least Sarah Harrison. Mm-hmm. So what happened there? Because I know in the film, Risk, you're on the phone with Julian Assange and he's screaming at you. So
So it's interesting. So these films, The Citizen Four and Risk, kind of crisscross around the Edward Snowden disclosures. And what had happened, so I'd been filming with Julian for a while. And when I started filming him, I was sort of an observer and I was like learning these tools around encryption, secure communication, compartmentalization, all these things that they use to protect their sources. I was learning but didn't really know that I would ever need in the same kind of a way. And then when I was contacted by Ed, I was using similar types of things and I was compartmentalizing information. And the reason you compartmentalize information is to protect people and sources. So things are kind of need to know. And so I didn't tell Julian that I'd been contacted, even though I was filming with Julian. I went to Hong Kong. Glenn and I did the reporting, and then we published the video with Ed. And after that, I was contacted. And as you see in the film, WikiLeaks and Julian and Sarah knew a lot about the threats of extradition and what countries would be safe for asylum. And they were like, Hong Kong is not safe. And they knew that really well. And then they stepped in, taking, you know, really huge risks to assist getting Ed from Hong Kong and out of there to seek asylum. They didn't plan for him to stay in Russia. They were trying to get to South America. And so it was really Sarah at enormous personal risk stepping in and helping him. But I didn't know she was doing that.
But how did they know about Snowden? Because it was all so secret.
Yeah, because I published.
So we
released the video, and then the whole world know, and then they were like, "Whoa, time out! You're in the wrong place. He's not safe there."
And then
they stepped in on their own, and they kept it, you know, compartmentalized in the same way because they didn't want, anyone to find out. Right. So I learned that they were assisting Ed getting out of Hong Kong from Twitter. You know, which is a surprise. And the footage that you see and that we're using in the film that was both in Citizen Four and in Risk was filmed by WikiLeaks. So we've licensed it from them. So I wasn't in the room with Julian when he was sort of shepherding this flight. And it's pretty extraordinary that he was able to do that because, you know, here you have somebody who's one of the most surveilled people on the planet inside this small embassy. And you have a massive effort of the U.S. government to find Snowden, and he manages to, get him out of the country.
Right, that in itself is pretty surreal, isn't it? Because he's got to be under constant surveillance.
Exactly.
Right?
So, which is, I think, a testament to both his, I think, skill sets in terms of how to communicate securely, because the U.S. certainly didn't want to see what happened. I mean, they were very interested in finding Snowden.
How did he actually get contacted? Or what? I mean, did he basically? He probably must have known Assange by reputation, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But he put his life into his hands, didn't he?
For sure. Yeah. I mean, so Snowden had a lawyer, and anyone who contacted us, we put them in touch with that lawyer. So I think that they would have, I can't speak for what WikiLeaks, how that communication happened, but they certainly were were willing to take an enormous risk. I mean, that was an enormous risk on the part of Sarah Harrison to find a safe place for Ed. And in the film, you'll see that this happened, that the Snowden came out at the same time that Chelsea Manning's trial was concluding. And so I think that they were in this position of seeing like a worst case scenario with what happened with Chelsea Manning, who was, you know, sort of informed on by a hacker and then paid this horrible price. And I think, you know, they deserve a lot of credit for stepping in at great risk to help Ed.
And why do you think Snowden then chose Hong Kong, given that he had a background in the intelligence world? He's obviously a pretty savvy guy.
Sure, but I mean, he needed to find a place where there was some kind of arm's length from the U.S., but that you didn't need a visa for.
I see.
Because in intelligence community, they you're supposed to let people know if you're leaving the country. So I think that was the reason he felt that he had a window where he could meet with journalists that would, you know, provide a certain kind of a buffer or protection. But I mean, I've talked a lot about Ed's choice. I mean, his goal was to release the information. I mean, I think he thought that he was willing to accept whatever consequences came.
Right. And again, I'm speaking with Laura Poitras, who's a documentary filmmaker and journalist, who is a co-founder of The Intercept and a founder of the new video journalism project, Field of Vision. She's made a number of films, including My Country, My Country, which was nominated for an Academy Award, The Oath, which is about Guantanamo, nominated for 2 Emmys, and Citizen 4, which won the Academy Award. And her latest film, Risk, is about Julian Assange, which opens nationwide in theaters Friday, May the 5th. And will be aired later on Showtime. So let's go back to Julian Assange, who preceded. So you were working on that film, right?
That's right.
For had to be a number of years.
Yeah, I began filming with Julian in 2011. So it was after the first wave of Manning disclosures had come forward. So the war logs, the State Department cables. And when I started filming, the Arab Spring was kind of flowing across the region. And you know, for me, I don't know. I mean, I'm curious your feelings, but those disclosures kind of, I think, brought back a kind of adversarial journalism that we were missing around looking at U.S. policy internationally. And I felt like it was kind of a game changer. And I think Julian understood something that, you know, that now we're seeing come to pass, is how the internet can both democratize information, but also how states and governments use it. And also that providing sort of a platform for whistleblowers to come forward.
Right. Well, the revelations from Iraq of the helicopter gunship is the total antithesis of the embedded journalism. I mean, that was one of the obscenities of the Iraq war, was that the press was so much a part of, they're almost the PR arm of the army, and that the Bush people wanted to make it as sanitized as possible. We never saw dead Iraqis. You know, they got mad at you because you made a film about the impact of that war on average Iraqi people, which brought some humanity to and the faces of these people.
Yeah.
They wanted to have an immaculate war that was just all Buck Rogers stuff.
Yeah.
And then you actually saw, from what Chelsea Manning revealed, you actually saw the real Buck Rogers.
Yeah. I mean, one of the sort of tragedies of this era, that it's people like Chelsea Manning or Edward Snowden that have to put their freedom on the line so that we can understand what the U.S. is doing.
But how does Julian Assange feel about Chelsea Manning? In other words, some people accuse him of basically getting off scot-free, in the sense that the guy that actually did the leaking is the one that's doing hard time.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to speak for Julian just in general, but I think that, I mean, Julian definitely feels that what Manning had done and Chelsea had done was, you know, absolutely in the public interest, as what whistleblowers do, and at huge personal risk. I mean, I think there's no doubt about that.
Right.
You know, I mean, the role of publishers is to publish information that's in the public interest, and I think that's what Julian is trying to do with WikiLeaks. So.
But that's,
and I think in terms of like getting off, I mean, he's protected by, you know, free speech and First Amendment to publish this information. So, I mean, I'm very concerned about sort of a shifting paradigm where there are threats being made against publishers. And, you know, those are threats not just against WikiLeaks. Those are threats against the work that you do, the work that journalists
do. I understand that. And that's why we're heading into a big collision here with Julian Assange, because the authorities, with the head of the CIA, basically putting a target on his back and saying he's a traitor, And so the fact that his defense is that he's a publisher, not an agent of a foreign hostile power. That's the way that he's been portrayed. So the real, it will come down to the issues of protecting publishers.
Absolutely. I mean, we should all be incredibly concerned about what the director of the CIA and Attorney General Sessions has said targeting WikiLeaks. I mean, that's not just a threat against WikiLeaks. That's a right. threat against sources. It's a threat against publishers. And it's a threat against the free press. And it's very much consistent with what Trump campaigned on, going after the press.
Well, and it's also worth noting that the Snowden revelations were published in full by the Washington Post, the Guardian, the New York Times. I mean, it wasn't as if the mainstream press didn't recognize the value of this material.
Of course.
So you sort of can't have it both ways, can you?
How do you mean?
Well, in other words, attack the messenger, but enjoy publishing the message.
I'm still confused. I mean, I think that, the Obama administration was also pretty aggressive going after publishers and sources and trying to criminalize it.
Yeah. The messenger has been under fairly consistent attack. I'm talking about Assange.
Yeah.
And I don't think he's a likable person. I think the film, it's an honest portrayal, but there are times when, when he's getting his hair cut and stuff like that, you get the impression of somebody that is almost like a cult-like figure in that particular scene. But it's not a popularity contest. It's about what people do as opposed to who they are.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, my role as a filmmaker is to document things in complex ways and let the audience grapple with their feelings.
Yeah. That's what I think gives it, that it is a complex and ambiguous portrait. An accurate one, but nevertheless. So, I was just telling you earlier that Julian Assange wrote a piece early on about how my younger brother in Australia, who was a leading investigative journalist, inspired him to become a journalist because my younger brother, Chris Masters, did a report on this corrupt government in Queensland, which is where Julian Assange grew up. And the report brought down the Queensland government and created something called the Fitzgerald Commission, which is a royal commission, which we don't have here, because, the House Intelligence Committees, the fix is in, and that's not going to go anywhere, and people are calling on for the Russian investigation, and it'll never happen because Trump has to sign off on it. But there is a mechanism called a royal commission, and that eventually brought down that government. So to that extent, I have a connection with him.
That's interesting. Now, I mean, I think Julian...
Strong personal...
As a publisher, Julian has revealed really important stories, and I think that benefit the public interest, and that he's... And that's interesting that's sort of where his sort of... were one of the things that inspired him. But there's a consistency from when Julian... If you look at his original sort of manifesto documents from 2006, when WikiLeaks was started, was all about revealing, that information should be available to the public, that information that's being held by powerful institutions.
Right.
And he's very consistent around that.
Well, but that's what's been lost is, you have to go back to Ida Tarbell and Mark Twain to the days of the muckrakers in this country to get that kind of investigative journalism and courageous investigative journalism that really had consequences.
Yep.
I mean,
yep.
And the first investigative journalist was, in fact, Ida Tarbell, and she brought down Standard Oil, which was the most powerful corporation in the world, at least had it split up. And, of course, at the end of the day, the Rockefellers got even richer as a result, but that's another matter.
It's always a question of unintended consequences, right?
So tell us about some of the somewhat surreal moments in your film Risk about Julian Assange. Lady Gaga, that was pretty surreal. And I've read somewhere that Pamela Anderson is also kind of a fan of his and brought him lunch from Fortnum and Mason's or something.
Yeah, I mean, Julian gets visitors. I mean, I love this scene with Lady Gaga. I mean, she does this interview that is really revealing. She's trying to get him to talk about what he feels, and Julian responds by saying, I don't care how I feel. And it becomes increasingly surreal as he describes all the agencies that are investigating him and what is... and her questions are quite, interesting because the list goes on and on and on. You think he could, continue to list organizations, sort of forever. And And what I love about the scene is that it's actually quite revealing about him, as much as it is very humorous right. in terms of their exchange.
So what do you think is the Russian connection? Because obviously it's a huge issue here, even though Trump has very cleverly built a firewall. He's put his guy in at the CIA, he's put his guy in at the Attorney General. He's make sure that he's got Nunez, this clown, House Intelligence.
Who stepped down now?
He made a fool of himself, but he's still got Burr, slow walking that. So there's a firewall that he's built. Mm-hmm. So you have a peculiar situation now where progressives who used to be, if not hate the CIA, were extremely suspicious of the CIA, now can't wait for the CIA to find the evidence to impeach Trump. Then you've got conservatives who have always been rah-rah, patriots, hated the Soviet Union and are suspicious of Russia. They're all supporting Trump. So everything's been turned on its head.
Right. I agree that we're living in this sort of moment where we're not quite sure, you know, which side is up and, like, you know, who's playing who and who. What is the actual end game here? I mean, I think, you know, Comey was very clear that they're in an investigation. And the sources that I've talked to believe that they're might be indictments. So I don't know if this firewall is really, you know, if that's an accurate description of what's happening. But
there's no question that Trump does not want to be impeached. I mean, I can't imagine he does.
Of course. Yeah. Right. No, of course he doesn't. But but if you were, so for instance, if you felt that you are in danger of being indicted, what would be the first, I mean, everything he's doing seems to be, you know, sort of preemptive, right? So you question the legitimacy of the press before the press reports on, you know, your activities. And so there seems to be these sort of preemptive moves and deflections. And I don't quite understand why they're attacking WikiLeaks now. And is this sort of like a bait, like sort of a distraction because they know that there's an investigation that's coming after them? I'm not sure. But in terms of the leak itself, so journalists are not, you know, it's not their job to say who their sources are. And I can't, and Julian's not going to tell me who his source is. And he might not even know. I mean, you have to understand that WikiLeaks is a platform where sources can leak anonymously. He might not know the source, or he might know. We don't, that's not something he's been willing to say. And what I think it raises is bigger questions for journalists, because, I mean, sources always have motivations, right?
Right.
So there's the motivations of the source and then decisions. And then there's the sort of newsworthiness of information. And I think that there's not really a question whether or not the DNC emails or the Podesta emails were newsworthy. Of course they were newsworthy. Right. They were published by the New York Times. Sure. They were published by WikiLeaks. They exposed things, you know, corruption within the Democratic Party. They exposed or revealed Hillary Clinton's relationship with financial institutions that were absolutely newsworthy, no doubt.
Right, but wasn't the argument, though, about the timing?
Well, but the, I mean, but the New York Times published stories about Clinton and Trump. I mean, there's no, I mean, like, what timing? I mean, I think
because it happened, I think, on the eve of wasn't it the eve of the debate between her and
I mean, every news editor around, you know, that sits down is going to, like, think of, like, okay, is they're going to go through the process of, like, is it verifiable, and then when to publish. I think, for instance, I don't think that Julian or WikiLeaks has a whole bunch of information about Trump that they withheld. That's not their style. They would have published it if they had it. Mm-hmm. I think who is doing the gaming, you know, if it was, so say we accept the intelligence community's assessment that it was a Russian hack, which it seems to be what happened, even though I think they've provided very little evidence for us to make that assessment, and I think that they should provide more evidence. You know, they could be the ones doing the gaming. They release this information to this group of people through an intermediary. They release, you know, other information to others. And it puts, you know, everybody in this question of, like, okay, well, what is this new era, and how do we navigate it? And, you know, you could, if you received newsworthy information from an anonymous source, would you publish it?
Sure. In a heartbeat. I mean, as long as I didn't think it was going to harm anybody, and there was anything in it that could cause somebody put their life or their career or their family in danger.
Right.
But when you mentioned earlier about the idea of the politics of distraction, my sense is that everything, you know, goes to the Russian story, because, you know, if you throw a few cruise missiles at Syria, if you drop some big stupid bomb in Afghanistan, or you threaten war with North Korea, you sure as hell take that Russian story off the headline. Mm-hmm. So there is that. There's a poll that just came out that's just unbelievable, that something like 80-something% of Trump supporters do not think he lies, and believe that the mainstream press lies all the time. So we're in a world now, the world of alternative facts and fake news, the world in which the truth is a moving target. It's an extraordinary environment to even be having this discussion, sure. Don't you think?
Yeah, no, I do. I mean, I think that, yeah, the politics of distraction is happening, and you don't know what is motivating what. Everything has to be questioned. And from my perspective, you know, my job is to continue to try to unveil things that I believe are truthful and also complex, like, which is, you know, it's an interesting moment to release a complex film into, you know, this kind of very polarized political environment.
Right. Well, that is, as I say, that was the most powerful thing about Risk is its complexity in terms of this portrait of this character who some people think he's a hero, some people think he's a traitor. He might be both.
Or neither. I mean, is he an important? I mean, my question as a journalist, is he an important historical figure? And I think that's...
Well, you got no argument there.
Exactly.
And likely, and the same is true of your previous subject.
Right.
Edward Snowden.
Yeah, I'm not interested in, sort of creating, platitudes or stereotypes.
Well, I congratulate you on your film, which opens Friday, May the 5th in Los Angeles. It's already opened in New York, I think. And when will it be on Showtime?
It's opening nationwide on May 5th.
Nationwide?
Yeah.
And when will it be on Showtime?
In the summer.
Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And I've been speaking with Laura Poitras, who's a documentary filmmaker and journalist, who is a co-founder of The Intercept and the founder of a new video journalism project, Field of Vision. She has made a trilogy of films about post-9/11 America. Her first film, My Country, My Country, focused on the Iraq War and was nominated for an Academy Award. The second, The Oath, about Guantanamo, was nominated for 2 Emmys. And in January of 2013, she was contacted by an anonymous source claiming to have evidence of NSA illegal activity. After several months of anonymous email, she traveled to Hong Kong with Glenn Greenwald to interview the source, Edward Snowden. All this is documented in a third film of the 9/11 trilogy, Citizen Four, which won an Academy Award. And her NSA reporting contributed to a Pulitzer Prize for Public Service awarded to The Guardian and The Washington Post. Her latest film is Risk, which is about Julian Assange, and it opens nationwide in theaters Friday, May the 5th, and will be aired later on Showtime. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. Land here under the